She was up and dressed and had finished breakfast in front of the fire when the nurse opened the door. In came Scrub and the Marshwiggle. "Hello, good morning," said Jill. "Isn't this fun? I've slept about 15 hours, I believe. I do feel better, don't you?" "I do," said Scrub, "but Puddleglum says he has a headache." "Hello, your window has a window seat. If we got up on that, we could see out." And at once they all did so. And at the first glance, Jill said, "Oh, how perfectly dreadful." The sun was shining, and except for a few drifts, the snow had been almost completely washed away by the rain. Down below them, spread out like a map, lay the flat hilltop which they had struggled over yesterday afternoon. Seen from the castle, it could not be mistaken for anything but the ruins of a gigantic city. To crown all, in large, dark lettering, across the centre of the pavement, ran the words, "Under me." The three travellers looked at each other in dismay, and Scrub said, "The second and third signs muffed." And at that moment, Jill's dream rushed back into her mind. "What I don't quite understand," said Jill, "is how we didn't see the lettering. Or could it have come there since last night? Could he, Aslan, have put it there in the night? I had such a queer dream." And she told them all about it.
"Why, you chump," said Scrub, "we did see it. We got into the lettering. Don't you see? We got into the letter E in me. That was your sunken lane. We walked along the bottom stroke of the E, due north, turned to our right along the upright, came to another turn to the right, that's the middle stroke, and then went on to the top left-hand corner, or, if you like, the northeastern corner of the letter, and came back, like the bally idiots we are. We must just own up. We've only four signs to go by, and we've muffed the first three."
"You mean I have," said Jill. "It's quite true. I've spoiled everything ever since you brought me here. All the same, I'm frightfully sorry and all that. All the same, what are the instructions?"
"Under me doesn't seem to make much sense."
"Yes, it does, though," said Puddleglum. "It means we've got to look for the prince under that city. How can we now? No doubt if we'd had our minds on our job when we were at the ruinous city, we'd have been shown how, found a little door or a cave or a tunnel, met someone to help us. We'd have got down under those paving stones somehow or other. Aslan's instructions always work. There are no exceptions. But how to do it now, that's another matter."
"Well, we shall just have to go back, I suppose," said Jill.
"Easy, isn't it?" said Puddleglum. "We might try opening that door to begin with." And they all looked at the door and saw that none of them could reach the handle.
"Our only chance," said Scrub, "is to try to sneak away by daylight. Mightn't there be an hour in the afternoon when most of the giants are asleep? And if we could steal down into the kitchen, mightn't there be a back door open? We must put them off their guard, though. We must pretend we love being here and are longing for this autumn feast."
"That's tomorrow night," said Puddleglum. "I heard one of them say so."
"I see," said Jill. "We must pretend to be awfully excited about it and keep on asking questions. They think we're absolute infants anyway, which will make it easier."
"Now," said Scrub, "if we could only get someone to open this door, we've got to find out all we can about this castle."
Luckily, at that very moment, the door opened, and the giant nurse bustled in, saying,
"Now, my poppets, like to come and see the king and all the court setting out on the hunting? Such a pretty sight."
They lost no time in rushing out past her and climbing down the first staircase they came to. The noise of hounds and horns and giant voices guided them, so that in a few minutes they reached the courtyard. Then they saw the queen in a kind of litter, supported on the shoulders of six young giants. Jill put on her most attractively childish smile, rushed across to the queen's litter and shouted up to the queen,
"Oh, please, you're not going away, are you? You will come back."
"Yes, my dear," said the queen. "I'll be back tonight."
"Oh, good, how lovely," said Jill. "And we may come to the feast tomorrow night, mayn't we? And we do love being here. And while you're out, We may run over the whole castle and see everything, mayn't we? Do say yes.
The Queen did say yes, but the laughter of all the courtiers nearly drowned her voice. It was now drawing near to that time of the day on which their hopes of escape depended, and all became nervous. They hung about in passages and waited for things to become quiet. The giants in the hall sat on a dreadfully long time after the meal was over. It was agonizing, waiting till these finished their jobs and, one by one, wiped their hands and went away. At last, only one old giantess was left in the room.
"Well, dearies," she said to them, "let's put the kettle there. That'll make a nice cup of tea presently. Now, I can have a little bit of a rest. Just look into the scullery like good poppets and tell me if the back door is open."
"Yes, it is," said Scrub.
"That's right. I always leave it open so as Puss can get in and out, the poor thing."